lesson of early word. Welcome to First Flights, the Penguin Debut Author Program, a unique opportunity for librarians to get to know the authors of major new titles coming out in the next few months. If you haven't already, you can join First Flights by signing up on earlyword.com. You'll receive advanced copies of forthcoming debut novels and have the opportunity to join a live online chat with each author. Today, I'm here in the Penguin Studios with Emily Croy Barker, author of The Thinking Woman's Guide to Real Magic, her first novel coming from Viking Pamela Dorman Books on August 1st. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you very much for having me here.
First of all, I love the title of the book. It's really memorable. How'd you come up with that title?
You know, I wanted something that would be memorable and fun, that would sort of hint at the fact that it's not, you know, one of these sort of swords and sorcerers kind of fantasy books.
But still hints at being fantasy.
Yes. I wanted a book that would have a sense of fun. I wanted a title that would have a sense of fun.
The book is fantasy, obviously. And I have to admit, I'm not drawn to fantasy naturally. But I think your book might be a gateway drug. I have talked to some fantasy readers who say what they love about your book is that it kind of shakes up the fantasy genre. Are you really into fantasy yourself?
I do like fantasy. It's not the only thing that I read. I loved Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. I loved the Harry Potter books. Even Kate Atkinson, who's best known now for her Jackson Brody mysteries, has written some very clever fantasy books.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I have to ask you, how did you name your heroine, who is Nora? And I happen to be a Nora, too. Nora seems to be a name you meet more often in literature than you do in real life.
I think that's right. I don't know any Noras, and I didn't have any preconceptions about, you know, who a Nora would be. It had a sort of neutral cast, and perhaps because it starts with the word no, it seemed a little... There was a sort of negativity there, and of course
that's so funny. I never thought of that.
And of course, Nora starts off as a very passive character, and it's short, easy to type.
Librarians are fascinated with research, mm-hmm. and you have a background in law. I think lawyers are interested in research too. Mm-hmm. Did you do quite a bit of research for the book?
First of all, I'm not a lawyer. I just want to make that clear. But I thought.
But you play one.
I cover them. I write about them and think about them a lot. I spent a lot of time thinking about what kind of world I wanted to create in my book. What would be reasonable? What would be what would make sense? In terms of thinking about how what people would kind of utensils people would use or clothes they'd wear or what kind of art they'd create. I would go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art and spend a lot of time wandering around various galleries, especially the non-Western galleries, the Asian, Middle Eastern.
Well, that's curious because it has a Western setting. So what did the Asian galleries do for you?
Well, I wanted to get my mind outside the kind of the European timeline. I think, you know, the physical setting of the book is very much like Europe. It's a post-Ice Age Europe. And yet, you know, this is a different world. They don't have the same kind of history that we have. They don't have a Roman Empire. They don't, you know, have all the. They don't have the pyramids. So it's, you know, I was trying. I could thought, you know, their art, their architecture. It could look like, you know, well, almost anything that human beings have come up with in this world.
So in a way, what you did was you got yourself out of normal, your routine ways of thinking in order to create the fantasy.
Right. I tried to anyway.
Yeah.
Yes.
I alluded to you having a background in the legal profession. Mm-hmm. You were executive editor at The American Lawyer, which is a fairly interesting magazine. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's for and about lawyers at the 200 largest firms in the country and some of their international competitors. It covers the work they do and how they're run as businesses. It's kind of the people magazine of the legal world in some ways.
Which is an interesting concept, the people magazine of the legal world. So what made you want to write a novel?
I didn't set out to write a novel. I simply had some very compelling characters come into my mind, and a story sort of emerge, and I felt I have to write this down. And so I started doing that, and it was just really for my own pleasure.
So tell me about the characters emerging in your mind.
Well, I had the idea of a woman who'd been seduced by magic, and sort of transformed into an idealized, possibly glamorous version of herself. And then I had this idea of another character kind of telling her to snap out of it. You've been enchanted. And I could tell that he was a magician. Why he was helping her, I didn't know. But when I started to think about this and who they were and how they got to this point, then this bigger story started to emerge in my mind. And it was so fascinating to me that I just thought, I've got to start writing this down.
And you did start writing it down.
Yes, I did.
For how long did you write it down?
About 3.5 years of working most weekends, vacation.
Did you think you were writing for publication?
Of course I was. I dreamed of that, but it wasn't something that I expected. It was really something that I wanted to create, to finish, and for my own satisfaction.
Now the book is a long book. It's mm-hmm. about 550 pages, mm-hmm. which is not unusual for fantasy. Mm-hmm. But you said you wrote it for 3.5 years. How many pages did you end up with?
I think the first draft was over 1,300 manuscript pages.
Wow. Then what did you do? How did you get it from the point of 1,300 manuscript pages to publication?
Well, I was horrified. I mean, when I printed it out for the first time, I mean, I'd never even really done a page count because I had the files and each chapter was a separate file. I showed it to a couple of my friends and asked for their opinion. And then I started cutting it down myself, and I got it down to about 1,000 pages.
Was that a painful process or is that fun?
It was fun. I mean, I as an editor, I'm used to cutting things down.
Sure.
I've had a lot of experience with it. So I knew, and I could, it was fun to figure out what I could take away and, what would.
And still keep the essence.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So then did you find an agent?
Yes. A very good, one of my college roommates actually had a friend who had a friend who was a wonderful agent, Emma Sweeney. And my college roommate's friend got in touch with her and said, would you be interested in reading this, this woman's book? And Emma was kind enough to say, sure. And she was great. I mean, as soon as she started reading, she started getting back to me with feedback, with, emails. And that was, so encouraging. So, and then she had some terrific ideas about how to cut it even more.
So how long did it take from Emma's first look at the manuscript, your back and forth mm-hmm. thing, until somebody bit and said they wanted to publish it?
It happened so fast.
Really?
Yes, it was amazing. It was, I think I sent it to her at the end of April. This would have been 2010. She read it very quickly. She wanted me to make some cuts. I made them very quickly. She started sending it out around mid-May. And then she wanted to get some reaction from people by the end of BEA, at the end of May. So within 6 weeks after I'd sent her the manuscript, I had a contract.
That must have been pretty stunning after 3.5 years of toiling away at it.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe it.
What was the first, your first reaction?
Just being stunned. Just astonishment.
So Emma's already talked to you into cutting a lot out of it.
Yes, yes.
Now you're getting to Pam.
Yes.
Pam Dorman.
Right.
And was there more cutting then?
Yes. I mean, it was still way too long, and we worked so hard all through the editing process to bring it down. Both Pam and Bina Kamlani, who also worked on the manuscript, and me, and we ended up. I don't think we cut anything significant, but we did a lot of surgical cutting all the way through. We took out certain scenes. Again, it's kind of an intellectual puzzle. how much can we take away and still have...
Keep the essence.
Yes, right, yes.
Right. The cover is pretty stunning.
Yes, isn't that great?
Did it go through a lot of processes, or did that just seem to come naturally?
I wasn't really in on the design process. I saw the almost finished cover and thought it was, you know, really stunning. I did suggest that they put the owl in the top right-hand corner.
And yeah. It's an interesting challenge when you have a title that is that long,
right,
to set it up. So I think that spiral.
Oh, I think that it was very it's ingenious. Yes.
Well, your book's getting some great advance buzz. That must be very exciting. You've been picked by the LA Times in their summer reading preview, Glamour Magazine in their summer preview. There's some wonderful buzz at Book Expo. So I think the next few months are going to be a lot of fun for you.
Oh, I'm having a lot of fun. I mean, I've loved writing this book, and my hope is that people will enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed writing it.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me and giving us some insights on your debut novel, The Thinking Woman's Guide to Real Magic. And thanks to you out there for listening. If you're not a member of Penguin's First Flights program, you can sign up on earlyword.com. And please come back for a live chat with Emily on Wednesday, July 24th from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern.